We do not have a quorum yet, but in the interest of time, we'd like to begin our testimony in front of the Higher Education Finance Committee. And our agenda today has one bill, and also we'll be hearing from Minsky's faculty, I guess. I can begin with the testimony from the faculty. And I don't know if this order is Nancy Black. Is that who's first? Okay. Dr. Black. Oh. Okay, Dr. Myers also? Okay. Welcome, and please identify yourself for the committee.
Thank you. I'm Nancy Black, president of the Interfaculty Organization. Chair Nornis, members of the committee, the Interfaculty Organization, or IFO, represents approximately 3,000 full and part-time faculty at the seven Minnesota State Universities. We are your workforce that produces half the teachers, half the business graduates, and along with the faculty at the community colleges, almost 80% of the nurses in Minnesota. We provide education that produces effective citizens and leaders of society. Indeed, five of the members of this committee hold state university degrees and were educated at some point by state university faculty. I appreciate this opportunity to address you. I'm new to the job, which has the disadvantage that I'm still learning about this process. It also has an advantage in that I can testify as someone who is fresh out of the classroom where I've been teaching for the last 19 years, as well as a department chair for 9 years. I know firsthand how your decisions on state budgets and policy affect teaching and learning. Today I'd like to comment on my organization's positions on some of the policy and budget issues you will be deciding in the very near future. First, some policy issues. Last week you had before you a bill to allow students who attended and graduated from Minnesota high schools to attend public post-secondary institutions at resident tuition rates. We strongly support that bill and urge its inclusion in the higher ed bill. This is the right thing for the legislature to do, and we thank Representative Cox and many members of this committee for co-authoring this legislation. The second policy issue I would like to comment upon is the bill authored by Representative Opatz and others on the committee allowing state universities to offer applied doctoral programs. Our faculty are prepared to teach in applied doctoral programs. Many teach in the 163 graduate and 4 postgraduate programs offered by Minsky now. Indeed, some of our faculty have taught in the doctoral programs for the U of M when these programs were offered in the outstate areas. We are in a very favorable position because of our lower costs, which means lower tuition, and we are geographically spread about the state to deliver practice-oriented doctoral programs to increase the much-needed supply of nurse educators, educational administrators, and counselors. Right now, only state universities within Minnesota are barred from planning to serve these programs. We hope you will do away with that barrier. Now the big issue, the budget. Our state universities and the faculty have suffered in recent bienniums. The state appropriation to Minsky for this year, FY05, was $546 million. 6 years ago, in 1999, the state appropriation was $3.5 million more in actual dollars, $549 million. In those same 6 years, enrollment at Minsky increased by 30,000 students, from 106,000 to 136,000, a 28% increase with no additional money from the state. But that's only part of the story. Since 1999, there has been a 15% inflation increase that has not been recognized. If you adjust per pupil appropriations for inflation, the per pupil appropriation buying power declined from $5,148 to $3,482. What has happened as a result of appropriations not keeping up with enrollment and inflation? Well, as you know, in the last 6 years, student tuition rates have skyrocketed, approximately 67%. We are making it harder to attend college at the same time that the Citizen League says we should be raising the expectations of students to achieve more higher education. A second impact has been on the faculty. There are a few factors more important to the quality of the education that a student receives than the quality of the faculty teaching the course, whether it be online or in traditional classroom. You probably all remember a teacher who played a pivotal role in your own life. Faculty salary did not increase last year. It was non-existent, zero. This year, faculty salaries went up one step, 2.4%, but that increase was offset by a 15% drop in employer contributions to dependent health care. Many of our faculty are now taking home less money in their paychecks than 2 years ago. What's the result on the educational system? Our salaries are no longer competitive in hiring faculty. Minnesota State University faculty pay is below average at every rank compared to peer institutions across the nation. That's important because state universities recruit nationally. The principles of economics apply to faculty hiring just like they do to professional sports. Those who pay the most get the best players. Our students deserve better than a labor pool that is already half picked over by better paying institutions. Last year, 46 faculty searches failed. Salary competitiveness is also important for retention. When salaries are non-competitive, the faculty are recruited away. It's caused by inadequate funding. A third consequence of inadequate funding is eroding quality due to larger class sizes, fewer offerings, and shrinking department budgets. Some of you are teachers, and you know what that means. Less time spent on each student, less intensive coursework. On our lobby days, one of our younger faculty members from Moorhead spoke of how she loves her job, but is having difficulty grading papers over the weekend after the number of students in one of her intro sections grew from about 100 to 200 students. It means twice as many papers to correct, so she's forced to assign fewer writing assignments. We don't get complaints from students about fewer writing assignments, but our faculty feel that students are being cheated in terms of the quality of their education. As a department chair, I have had to cut courses because of lack of funding. We have struggled. Oh, I'm sorry.
Just interrupt you for a moment. We do have a quorum.
Okay.
Officially, we call the meeting to order. So,
thank you, Chair Norris.
You may proceed.
Okay. As a department chair, I've had to cut courses because of lack of funding. We've struggled to hold students harmless in these budget cuts, but I had no choice to tell students that the graduation will be delayed because my department doesn't have the funds to offer the courses the students need when they need them. Faculty have built programs. We're watching them disintegrate. We support the Minsky request for enrollment growth. Our highest priority is the $130 million in enrollment growth we have counted on under the funding formula. In particular, we support the base enrollment funding of $72 million. These students are still on our campus. They need to be educated, and we still need the money to educate them. Our second highest priority is inflation recognition. At 2% per year, it will cost $63 million to cover inflation for the next 2 years. Inflation is going to occur whether you recognize it or not. The price of utilities will go up, the price of health care, the price of supplies will go up. We think the state should cover inflation through appropriations rather than have students cover it through higher tuition. We agree with Representative Abler's bill. We appreciate the governor's recommendation for a $170 million increase for Minsky. While it falls short of inflation and enrollment growth, we do recognize that compared to some other segments of the budget, we were treated better. There are some things, however, that we would suggest doing differently. In particular, we do not support the line-item approach to budgeting, with the exception of nursing. Line items fence money, reduce flexibility, and are a form of micromanagement. We support the past practice of sending a lump appropriation to Minsky and allocating as much of that money as possible out to the campuses to be spent on educating students. We believe in letting local campuses determine their spending priorities based on their mission, on the needs of their students, and the needs of their regions. The governor proposed fencing $20 million to designate up to 8 programs as centers of excellence, and he proposed fencing another $5 million for competitive salaries in the centers of excellence. Let me be clear. There isn't a faculty member in our organization who wouldn't love to be part of a center of excellence, especially if they get greater pay. But there are 240,000 students in over 3 3,600 Minscu programs that produce the teachers and nurses and law enforcement personnel for this state. All Minscu programs should be good, and all Minscu students should receive a quality education. We shouldn't just have 8 strong programs and 3,592 underfunded programs. We need to have competitive salaries for all of these faculty, not just in a few select programs. And of course, as a union, we believe compensation should be determined through the collective bargaining process. We believe the best approach to structuring the funding bill would be to cover enrollment and inflation, or as much of it as you can cover, without discrete line item appropriations. If you want Minscu to develop centers of excellence, or develop more online instruction, or increase access for underserved populations, simply tell Minscu in writer language to address these programs, these problems, and report back on their progress. This approach has worked well in the past and should be continued. The one line item the IFO does support is nursing, because we must address the very serious nursing shortage. We need to be addressing that issue now. It can't wait any longer. To speak on that issue, we have one of our outstanding nursing faculty members, Sonia Myers of Minnesota State University, Mankato. Professor Myers is also a member of our IFO Board of Directors. Thank you.
Thank you. Dr. Myers, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Nornes and committee members. Thank you for this opportunity. I am Sonia Myers, and I'm a registered nurse, doctorally prepared faculty member from the School of Nursing at Minnesota State University, Mankato, where I teach students in the hospital setting, on campus, and in online courses in the area of adult, child, and family health. I also direct the graduate program on a half-time basis. In addition, I come to you on behalf of Bemidji State University, Minnesota State University Moorhead, Metropolitan State University, St. Cloud State University, and Winona State University, their nursing faculties, and all other faculty members at those institutions whose coursework and student advising support nursing student education. At MSU, we currently have 236 enrolled undergraduate students in nursing. In addition, 31 students are enrolled in the Accelerated Option Program, our new program to prepare people with prior degrees for nursing. We have 50 graduate students currently enrolled and are primarily online curriculum from their homes within 150 miles of campus in places like Painesville, Champlin, Pine Island, Mountain Lake. We have 32 RN students who have their associate degree from one of our community colleges and are completing their baccalaureate degree. And we have at least 300 other students registered and taking pre-nursing courses. And to our dismay, we have been forced to deny admission to 150 qualified students who applied this academic year to our baccalaureate program because of limited faculty, space, and resources. As a statewide group of nursing faculty, we request your consideration for the following to help us meet the healthcare needs of the state of Minnesota, to which we are committed. Support for the governor's proposed $10 million designated to expand student enrollment in nursing programs, and support of House File 165 to allow Minscu to offer applied doctorates. Why? Nursing programs in the state have responded within current limits to the need for practicing nurses. We have done this by increasing class sizes, partnering with healthcare facilities, teaching year-round, decreasing our service to community, decreasing student advising time in the curriculum, and recruiting larger numbers of adjunct faculty, some of whom do not hold a master's degree. These measures have worked for now, but we are at a point where we are stretched about as thin as we can be. We are having difficulty recruiting qualified full-time faculty out of the service sector. We are having difficulty recruiting master's and doctorally prepared faculty to expand our enrollments. At MSU, we currently have 3 probationary track appointments open and no qualified applicants. We need faculty with expertise to provide teaching of students the essential clinical judgment skills you need. For instance, it takes a faculty expert to supervise 8 students, caring for 8 to 16 complex patients, to supervise the safe administration of 50 medications in an 8-hour shift, and to work with students and staff through ethical dilemmas with families. Expanding our nursing enrollment cannot occur without expanding faculty or buildings. Winona State University and Minnesota State University Moorhead currently offer a master's degree to prepare nurse educators. These graduates teach in LPN programs, associate degree RN programs, and in baccalaureate programs as clinical faculty. We need more similar programs, and we have the talent to do so. Frankly, however, there is not the time nor are there the resources to develop new programs while we are teaching the large amount of students we currently have. We are falling behind. We need your commitment of dollars to support new program development and implementation of graduate nurse educator programs. We also need your support for the bonding bill to enhance our teaching facilities. And finally, your support of House File 165 that would allow Minsky Universities to offer applied doctorates would help us plan for the future of nursing in Minnesota. We have had preliminary discussions with other universities about the possibility of creating a statewide collaborative Minsky doctorate in nursing practice. If we could offer a collaborative program, we could begin to meet the needs of doctorally prepared nurses statewide. We thank you for your continued support of nursing education in the state colleges and universities. We urge you to support health of the citizens through expanding baccalaureate and graduate nursing education in Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Myers. Any questions of Dr. Myers or Dr. Black? Would you care to...
I'm just here to keep him on time.
Okay.
How'd you do?
You did well.
How'd you do?
You did well. Representative Dempsey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This can go to either one of you. A proposal that has come forth has to do with the university in Rochester. And I'm just wondering if you would care to share your particular position relative to that.
It's not absolutely required if you answer, but if you have an opinion, I guess.
The organization did. Russ Stanton, Director of Government Relations for the IFO. The organization did develop a position of basically being supportive of offering more courses in Rochester if Rochester wants more courses. Currently, we have about 40 faculty members from Winona State University that teach in Rochester, 40 full-time faculty. And, of course, one of the concerns that we have as an organization, because we're the union for those faculty, is that if the entity were to change down there, those people would no longer be covered by the contract. And, you know, the other side of the contract would disappear. And while that's, you know, a minor concern to us in terms of Reddit or anything like that, we do have an obligation to those people, and a lot of them have built up seniority and pension plans and things like that, all of which could be thrown into jeopardy if things weren't done right in terms of a transition. So our concerns is that those people be treated right. I mean, they're not disloyal employees. Somebody just made a decision to do something different down there, or might make a decision to do that. And we would hope that whatever you do in Rochester, you'll do some careful planning, because there are big questions like this that we hope get addressed. I would hope that people would take a deep breath and slow down a little bit and look at all the implications of making the change that was proposed down there.
Representative Carlson, or Representative Dempsey,
yes. Is the management of the state university system, are they thinking on that as a possible option, or would they take a look at the expanding the number of nurses at, let's say, Mankato State or Moorhead State or whoever else the case may be? Because I believe I heard testimony from the last person saying that there was going to be a need of nurses in the state of Minnesota, and I think that's, I think you're correct, I'd agree with that. I think one solution to that is possibly expanding where we have, mm-hmm. or do we go to Rochester? And somebody's going to have to make that decision, and I'm wondering if the administration of the state universities is going to make a recommendation in regard to that, and or whatever else the case may be. Could you share that with me, or is that something you just assume not?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dempsey, as the union, we don't want to speak for the administration, but Laura King is here if you had had that question and wanted to direct it at her, but other than that, maybe Sonia, if you have anything to add.
Thank you. What I would say is that we are really, as a group of nursing faculty and administration of nursing programs statewide, we are all in collaboration together through the Minnesota Association for Colleges of Nursing. And so we are together with the University of Minnesota and all of the other colleges that are offering baccalaureate education. So those groups also are making some recommendations in terms of geographic location and mix and all of that kind of thing. And I support both of your statements in that, yes, we need more programs, and we need more people in the programs that exist. So I think with careful planning, we could do that well. Okay.
Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, I have a couple of questions, and one of them deals with the nursing question, and that's kind of the timing of all this, because if I recall correctly, last biennium when we were talking about nursing, one of the issues was getting enough instructors, mm-hmm. and it's sort of the chicken or the egg kind of thing. And what would be the timeline, assuming that we get the appropriation to expand the various nursing programs, considering the fact that there may be some difficulty hiring the instructors?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I could speak to that kind of in a maybe a two-tiered way. I believe that it would take us 2 years to get people through, well, maybe shorter, but 2 years to have people complete a master's in nursing with a focus in nursing education. Frankly, we are at the point where we can't hire any more people, and so I think it's going to be a both and. I think we truly do need to expand the number of nurse educators, and frankly, part of our problem is that we're not able to recruit them into nursing positions because the salaries in the healthcare facilities are so far above what we're earning. And many of us have gone into nursing education because of a calling to be there, to do what we do. However, we're finding that we're not competitive anymore, and so there may be some need to look at incentive salary kind of adjustments for people who are in the service sector, working together with service sector people. But I think it would take about 2 years to get master's prepared people on board enough for us to then again expand. We're really to capacity now in terms of what we can handle. And what I gave you is a snapshot of MSU Mankato, but that's the word on the street almost all over the state. So
Mr. Chairman, that answers the personnel side of the question. And mm-hmm. my second one was I was quite involved a few years ago when we started the nursing program at Metro, and mm-hmm. I think one at Moorhead, to mention a couple of them. Mm-hmm. And one of the issues I remember in particular with Metro was the availability of labs and mm-hmm. so on. Mm-hmm. And where are we there? Now, assuming we get the staff,
mm-hmm.
How do we align with the space question, the labs, and so on?
Dr. Myers.
Thank you, Tim Herman. I think we're being very creative in terms of labs and space. We are having a challenge with clinical sites. We are using hospitals 24/7 anymore between the baccalaureate and the LPN and the associate degree programs. We're really filling up those sites. What we are looking at, though, are development of some simulation labs that would help us to expand experiences in clinical decision-making for students, and I see that as one nice feature that could be done to enhance our ability for capacity of students. We are at capacity in most of our buildings for educating. And I think the other thing is that we as nurses are deeply concerned about burden on patients in clinical sites. So we work very well with our other colleagues in the associate degree programs, LPN programs, and the baccalaureate programs in not burdening a patient in one day so that only one nursing student may care for a patient in a day. And so we have those constraints. Classrooms, you know, we can put numbers of people in classrooms. It's the clinical that truly is of concern and safety.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Chairman, I have another question, if I might revert to something else that goes back to the Rochester question. I get some informal feedback. I haven't talked to anybody yet, at least from, for example, GRAUC, which is the Greater Rochester Education Consortium, and it's been a little vague, from my perspective at least, in terms of what the plans are for down there. Mm-hmm. And sometimes when I've been in conversations mm-hmm. with others, the conversation has focused on governance, you know, whether there would be a change in the governance, and I think in part that was what Mr. Stanton was responding to. But then I was in a conversation the other day, and they were talking about doctorate programs that was the need in Rochester. And so I was just wondering, and this maybe is a question of Mr. Stanton, if you know at all what direction they're talking about heading in or not, because I think it's leaving at least one member of this committee a little confused in terms of what they would like to see happen. I asked a question, remember, Mr. Chairman, a while back about what the need was that we were trying to respond to, but of late, as recently as just the other day, there was conversations about the need for doctorate programs of some type in Rochester, and when you mentioned, Ms. Blackwood, with your testimony, mm-hmm. the applied doctorate, I didn't know if that played into mm-hmm. the Rochester situation or if they're talking about mm-hmm. research PhDs because of the biotech and cooperative program with the University of Minnesota. Just interested in your sharing what you know, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chair, I don't know a lot in terms of their plans. What I do know is that the big share of the Winona faculty that are on the Rochester campus are nursing faculty. And I know Winona State does have an interest in participating in an applied doctoral program in nursing. So perhaps it might be located at Rochester. I'm not sure if it ever becomes a possibility.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I have heard maybe you have as well. There are apparently going to be some Rochester people up next week, I suspect, sometime fairly soon, and maybe we'll get a little clearer picture in terms of
we'll do the following week.
What the request really is. I think that's sort of right. Left us in a bit of a dilemma, not knowing, at least it's leaving me in a bit of a dilemma without knowing what it is that they're really requesting. But thank you.
All right. Thank you. Do you have anything further?
Well, I was just going to add in response to Representative Carlson that the three programs that we mentioned in terms of the nurse education, according to data that's been supplied, only 13 nurse educators are produced nationally, that is applied doctorates in nursing each year. I mean, this is a critical need. I'm not sure what the mission of Rochester will be, but certainly when we give consideration to these applied doctorates, we need to look at demand, and I'm sure you've heard Charlie Kite talk about the number of superintendents who will be retiring from Minnesota. This is our second area. And we also know the demand for psychological counselors who will have to have applied doctorates now. And these are three areas that are very much needed.
Thank you, Dr. Black. Dr.
Thank
Myers.
You. Thank you,
Chairman.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Tina Wade.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Norness and committee.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you for having us here today. I am not Tina Wade. I'm Joanne Roach. I brought Tina Wade and Greg Wright along with me, and we will each take a turn presenting some testimony and then would be more than happy to answer your questions. The Chancellor and his staff have given you an overview of the entire Minsky system and the budget request. The engine behind the facts and the figures, however, the numbers of students and graduates, the customized training, the initiative, is the faculty. And let me remind you that students don't come to a college because of its administrative staff or its fine strategic plan. They enroll in a college because of a solid faculty and good programs. I represent the 4,000 professional educators at our two-year colleges. I'm a veteran teacher, a vice president of our faculty union, a longtime negotiator of faculty contracts. I've earned every single one of these gray hairs. I'll speak briefly and candidly about a subject many faculty are reluctant to speak about, compensation. I'm going to be totally self-serving here because I know that contract negotiations begin here, and we don't often get a chance to talk to you about these issues. Because of exemplary contract language, at least 70% of our teaching staff are full-time faculty, people who teach for a living. We are and have been serving an ever-increasing difficult students, difficult in that more and more students are unprepared for college, and difficult in that they come to us with language and cultural and emotional challenges which demand one-on-one time and extraordinary resources for the same tuition as in the past. We have been attempting to meet these challenges with ever-shrinking resources. As we enter a new biennium and we begin taking our seats around the bargaining table with yet another bleak financial picture staring us in the face, I can sum up the mounting mood by saying that faculty are frustrated and angry. Each bargaining cycle, our negotiations team surveys the faculty about their ideas for and concerns for negotiations. We have never had a response like the one that we have had this year. 3 to 4 times as many faculty surveys returned. And I can tell you that I have never seen such anger as was expressed this year in the survey. Let me attempt to give you some of the reasons for that. When the state faced a huge budget deficit in the last biennium, we knew we were easy targets and expected that the budget would be balanced on the back of state employees. We grudgingly shared the pain. More of the same is not acceptable, and even the prospect of it angers faculty. I have bargained 7 faculty contracts. In those 14 years, I can honestly say that there has never been a good time for faculty salaries. Even if the system had money and record enrollments, we were told that our increases had to be kept within the pattern of the Merriam and Hubinger numbers of the other state employee unions. This frustrating one-size-fits-all method of bargaining for all state employees and lack of autonomy for Minsky in bargaining is frustrating for faculty and does not allow for addressing the unique needs of the higher education system. Our faculty are frustrated by the fact that in the last several rounds of bargaining, there has not been enough money to fund a meaningful base-building raise for all faculty in the unit. If we buy steps, as we did in the last round of bargaining, for faculty who are on the 21-step grid of our salary schedule, there is not enough money left for the 45% of the faculty, the veteran senior faculty, at the top of the schedule to receive a raise. 45% of our faculty have not had a raise for 3 years and are now making considerably less than they were making 3 years ago because of inflation, increased energy costs, and increased health care costs in premiums, deductibles, and copays. Still another disturbing trend in bargaining is small, one-time-only, lump-sum, non-base building infusions of money into bargaining which do nothing to improve the salary schedule. An uninviting salary schedule makes it difficult to hire and maintain faculty, especially in market-sensitive areas such as nursing, which we've just heard about. Master's degree nurses needed to teach in our programs are lured away from our campuses daily, and we cannot find replacement because of the salaries we pay. seeking waivers to hire new faculty above more senior faculty has created morale problems in many of our departments. Minnesota prides itself on excellence and innovation. Our faculty participate in voluntary professional development activities in record numbers, I'm proud to say. We learn the value of and buy into such innovations as writing across the curriculum, active learning strategies, lab-centered instruction. Faculty conduct professional development days and after-school activities at our campuses across the state, showcasing best practices for our fellow professionals. Ironically, however, the prospect of building contract provisions for such proven practices as reduced class sizes for writing-intensive courses is not even attempted at the bargaining table. Most improved teaching strategies have a price tag connected to them. In at least four of the last rounds of bargaining, we have asked the employer to take a new look, a 20th century look, at the way science faculty teach. We have asked to make some movement away from the old-fashioned 2 hours for one credit funding of science labs in recognition of the fact that science labs are now often integrated into lecture and vice versa. With this evolution in teaching style, as with the above active learning strategies mentioned, the problem of getting contract adjustments is always twofold. There is no money, and we are told that we cannot get anything that has the appearance of a workload reduction through the legislature, even if the provisions we ask for are proven to enhance student learning. So class sizes continue to increase, and 100 or more layoffs are issued each year. About 60 of those become real layoffs. Small but necessary programs such as graphic arts, machine tool, farm business management can no longer be supported as we scurry for enrollment dollars. Viable programs are closed because they are expensive and they take up room, and the vacated space becomes a lecture hall for a cash cow like psychology or sociology, which can pack 50 to 100 students into a section. And you can bet that the course assessment is not going to be writing intensive. It's going to be a machine graded multiple choice. The faculty position on funding this year is very similar to what I heard our colleagues from the IFO suggest. First, the state should honor its commitments and should pay for what has already been provided and consumed. Campuses did not cap enrollment, but added technology and services and courses and sections and hired faculty and staff to accommodate enrollment increases with the expectation that the bill would be paid. Second, new money is only that money over and above payment for what is owed. Deceptive word games smack of Orwellian propaganda techniques. And third, though some of our faculty will benefit from the Minsky initiatives, fenced money cannot be the only money available, since it does not allow for flexibility in addressing concerns in this biennium and negotiation cycle. Fenced money represents micromanagement. Finally, student tuition and stagnant faculty salaries can no longer be substituted for the state's obligations and responsibility for higher education. Thank you.
Thank you.
Give the microphone to my colleague, Greg Rice.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
Please identify yourself for the record, please.
My name is Gregory Wright. I'm from Rochester, Minnesota, at Rochester Community and Technical College. I have two color charts for you to look at, and unfortunately I have to make a correction on one of them so you could pencil that in. But the pink chart basically shows the increase of students at the Minsky two-year colleges, and you notice that it's also outlined there are five-year differences there. So over 5 years, we've increased 12.7%. Shows the part-time students are increasing, as well as the full-time students are increasing. The yellow chart shows you one of the effects of what's been happening over the last few years, and that's the decrease in counselors. Now, that's where the correction has to be made. There's actually 113 counselors, not 119 now, and it's a 10% reduction, not a 5% reduction over that same period. So enrollment's gone up 12%, counselors have been decreased about 10%. That's a real effect of what's been happening on the budgets. The budgets over the past few years have had a negative effect on student services and counseling in particular. Now, at the two-year level, counselors provide a number of vital services in addition to personal counseling, and those things are information like transfer information, which is a constantly evolving process, which Minsky Systems are working on, and we have more and more students transferring both to four-year institutions as well as from four-year institutions to two-year institutions, and those numbers are way up. Career counseling is way up, and that's due to the increased number of undecided students, newcomers to this country, minority students, and adults in transition because of layoffs or factory closings in Minnesota that have created a new level of need. The need for personal counseling has steadily increased since 9/11. Crisis intervention has increased because of the number of incidents of students who are in distress. And that has to do with a variety of things, including a rise in tuition and trying to balance that with working part-time to support themselves and family difficulties that accompany that. General counseling of students who need a long-term life plan information, which requires in-depth information not only in career counseling, but on course transfer, goal setting, and the matriculation process. The increasing number of post-secondary students has also created distress on the two-year colleges. In Rochester, we are the fourth high school. Because of the number, I call it the fourth high school, because of the number of increased post-secondary students who are not assigned to a counselor at the college, who are left to their own devices to plan. Certainly they can come to us if they wish, but that usually with that age group and maturity level, they choose generally not to. The increasing number of students at risk. More students are entering the two-year college system, have limited cultural knowledge and limited college skills. Retaining these students and encouraging their success has demanded more time of the counselors, and of course with fewer counselors that's put stress on the ability that we can have to serve all those students. The increasing number of part-time students also creates a new level of difficulty because they increase the head count, which means we have more students but taking fewer credits. So we have to see those students many more times than just one full-time student. All of these events are converging on the community and technical colleges at a time when enrollments are up and the number of counselors have steadily decreased. I am at Rochester Community Technical College, who at one time had seven counselors when we had 3,600 students on campus. And that was in 1996, and now we have four counselors with about 6,000 students. Our budgets are shrinking while our need is growing, and I'm hoping that this budget can be reversed. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you. Our next testifier, last name is
Wade.
W-A-D-E. Wade, okay.
Thank you.
All right, we were close. Tina Wade. Thank you,
Mr. Chairman. And I represent North Hennepin Community College, and I am a chemistry teacher there. I've taught chemistry for approximately 20 years, and 10 of those at North Hennepin. And when I first started teaching at the community college, the equipment we had was old, and most of our instrumentation was outdated and, frankly, not functioning. In the 1990s, we slowly brought this equipment and instrumentation up to date, and much of this funding for the new equipment has come from the Leveraged Equipment Matching Grant Program with donations from area chemical companies. The new science center that was funded by the legislature in 1998 allows us to teach in safe, clean environments, and we use these facilities from 7 a.m. in the morning until 9:30 at night, as well as weekends. The state has invested in good facilities for teaching science in North Hennepin, but to get the maximum return on that investment, the state also needs to provide funding which recognizes the growing demand for science courses and programs. Enrollment in chemistry classes has nearly tripled since the opening of our new building, from 54 full-year equivalents in fiscal year 01 to 162 full year equivalents in fiscal year 05. The college's enrollment has grown 30%, but appropriation from the state of Minnesota has actually decreased by several million dollars during this period of time. And being a chemist, I brought with me a graph today to show this, the fact that our enrollment, and this is at North Hennepin, has been increasing, but the red line is the state funding. So we have been in the opposite trend in that regard. The erosion of operating support from the state of Minnesota threatens our ability to deliver the quality of instruction as we as faculty believe is needed. If we do not receive adequate funding from the state this budget year, then we're in danger of losing most of the gains that we have made and not using our facilities to their maximum potential. Class sizes will increase, and in a chemistry lab, that is undesirable if outright dangerous. We have already put on hold new equipment purchases that are needed so that our students gain actual skills and experience that the businesses and industry expect that they will be proficient in when they finish in our programs. We do not have the funding to develop and advance any new programs in emerging areas or to expand these high-demand programs. We've put on hold to create new programs in science, such as the biotechnology degree, which people, again, in our area is asking for. And we have also not been able to explore new class offerings, such as the science classes, specifically for elementary education majors, any pre-pharmacy technical courses, and online or hybrid chemistry courses. Now, as I said, enrollment at North Hennepin has grown nearly 30% in the last 4 years, and we expect continued growth given the population growth in the Northwest metro area. The proposed state budget does not fund enrollment growth at the Minnesota State Colleges and University. After 5 consecutive years of significant enrollment growth, the Minsky system is due a budget adjustment of $130.8 million under current law. Because North Hennepin Community College is one of the fastest growing colleges in the system, we are especially damaged if there is no enrollment adjustment. In the years when enrollment adjustment has declined, the college returned the state money. This year's enrollment adjustment will fund additional classes and higher educational services our area residents are seeking. One of the chemistry department's main functions is to provide good quality, solid background in chemistry for our pre-nursing students. If we do not get adequate funding, then we will see the nursing classes increase in size and the eventual canceling of laboratory section as we lay off adjunct faculty. This will stop the pipeline of nurses going into our program. Nursing is one of our most expensive, but as was said earlier, most needed programs. In order to provide more nursing graduates to the community, we did create an evening and a weekend program 3 years ago that currently serves 100 nursing students, for which we have not received one penny of additional funding. Even with the expansion, we still have 7 applicants for each opening in the nursing program, but the college cannot fund any additional expansion. In order to make up for the funding loss over the last few years, we have increased tuition. Even with a 48% increase in tuition rates at North Hennepin Community Colleges, which students have had to endure, as a college, we are spending fewer dollars per student than we spent in 2002. Our state appropriation on a per-student basis declined 26% during this time period. I doubt whether we can consider another rise in tuition for next year. Our students just can't afford it. Other services that have been reduced are student opportunities to gain counseling advising services, as was brought up, inadequate tutoring and library services, and increasing class sizes. The chemistry department also has upper-level chemistry courses that train students going into chemistry, biology, pharmacy, dentistry, medicine, medical lab technology, as well as non-invasive cardiology. When I run into a North Hennepin alumni, whether it's at the hospital or at a pharmacy, they tell me they're doing well and really appreciate the top-notch training at North Hennepin that launched them in their careers. So today I'm asking you to please help us to continue to do our jobs and serve this important mission for our community. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any questions of three testifiers? Seeing none, I thank you very much for your testimony.
Okay, thank you.
And Representative Carlson, that gives you about 35 minutes.
Okay. I think in my request for a hearing, I said about 15, but I...
Oh, okay. Well, don't stretch it. Representative Carlson...
My comments, Mr. Chairman, will be much less than that, but there may be some others that will be commenting as well.
Do you care to begin by moving your bill?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. We did discuss another motion, but I assume the one that you want is that House File, what is the number on this one? 602 be recommended to pass. You didn't want that one, okay? For possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. The reason I played with that motion a little bit was that I mentioned to the chairman earlier we don't have budget targets yet. So, but on a serious note, Mr. Chairman, if I might, we do need an author's amendment, and it would be an oral one. And I have it written out here. I can hand it to you. But on line 12, if we would insert the words, this is a one-time appropriation at the end of that sentence. And also on line 18, then again, this is a one-time appropriation. And that would clarify the intent of the bill. And if you didn't get that, I have it here. Mr. Chairman, this bill deals with the question that it's come up on a couple of different occasions when we've had our budget overviews, and that is the excess funds that we find in the HESO account. And by way of a quick background, the higher ed systems last biennium were cut $380 million. And the base for HESO was increased by $35 million. And there are different ways in which we could structure this discussion, but as I pointed out in past meetings, the committee gets a target, whether we're on the upside or the downside, and if one of our major accounts gets more money than they need, you could arguably say then the others are getting less. And in this case, HESO received more than they ultimately needed for the financial aid program, and had their base not been adjusted by that $35 million, I would argue then that $16.5 million would have been available for the University of Minnesota, and $16.5 million would have been available for the Minsky system. So what this bill does is it attempts to recapture that money and redistribute it within the higher ed accounts within this biennium. And for members of the committee, if we don't enact this bill, what does in fact happen then is that at the end of the biennium, the $35 million contained in the bill simply transfers into the general fund. And when that happens, then the higher education community, if you will, loses those dollars. Now, if we look at it historically, I did ask Mr. Berg to check for me what has happened in recent years. And if you go back to 1990, if I recall correctly, the cancellations accumulatively totaled about $32 million, somewhere in that range, that just were canceled back into the general fund. I would argue that $32 million would have been in the base of the University of Minnesota or in the Minsky, because they were part of our targets initially. And we would have had more money available for higher education. Now, how that would have been spent is anybody's guess. It might have been spent in improvement in equipment. It might have been spent in improved salaries that we've just heard testimony about, or it might have been spent in a way that would have allowed lower tuition levels, or probably in some combination of all three. Well, this time we kind of hit the largest number in the sense of those projections may, in fact, instead of the $35 million that I have in the bill here, the cancelbacks, if you include reciprocity, could achieve by the end of the biennium $47 million. So we're talking about some pretty big money that is lost to the higher education community. So that's why the bill is before us. And, Mr. Chairman, if it would be appropriate at this time, then I'm not sure who will be here from the university. I know last week Mr. Fitzenreiter was here when we laid the bill over, but I know there are some university people in the audience, so I'm not sure which one of us is testifying. Ms. Peterson, all three.
Welcome.
Please identify yourself, please.
Thank you. Diana Peterson, the University of Minnesota. I apologize that I'm the one that drew the straw for here. We would have had Vice President Fitzenreiter here. He's still in the Senate testifying on a bill, and then I think he's going to the bonding conference committee from there. So you have me.
The senator is all right with this House member because she was housebroken. She was a member of the House before she went to the Senate. So
I should point out also that some of our members are in K-12 at this time. That's why some of ours are not. It's not lack of interest, but there are two committees meeting at the same time, and some just haven't figured out how to be in two places at once.
Exactly. We haven't either, Mr. Chairman. As Representative Carlson has stated, the cuts that the university sustained 2 years ago, obviously these dollars could have been used in a number of places had those dollars at that time. If they were funded to us now as one-time appropriation, one of the places that would probably be a high priority would be the area of technology. Technology is a place that benefits not only our faculty and staff, but certainly our students. So all could benefit from whatever amount of one-time money was put into that. We continually have classrooms that still need to be updated with technology. We have as Representative Carlson in particular would remember, the university's financial system is referred to as CUFS, and that went in 1988 or 1990 in that range, so it is an old system, and we need to replace that. It's about a $25 million expenditure the next 4 years, so that would be another place that we could spend some of these dollars. Our storage information, Dean Bob Eldy was here and was talking to you about some of the research he does. That kind of information requires an incredible amount of technology storage. We can hardly keep up with the demands and the needs for that kind of system as well. So that would just be a few of the areas that we could put these one-time dollars in the end would benefit the entire university community.
I thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And Mr. Chairman, we have some representatives of Minscu here as well. And last week it was Judy Borgen, but I don't see her, so I'm not sure.
Laura King?
Is that Laura King today? They apparently have had to do some switching.
You've got the second string this afternoon, Representative Carlson. Good afternoon, members. My name is Laura King, and I'm the Vice Chancellor and Chief Financial Officer for the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities, we're very appreciative of the effort that Representative Carlson is making through this bill. We as the university and as the author has mentioned sustained a very significant cut 2 years ago, and that would have been mitigated had this mechanism been in place. And I understand, I think you have another bill that would put this mechanism permanently into place, which we're appreciative of, because it is money that legislature directs toward higher education, and it seems sensible that if it's surplus one place, it be directed someplace else. We too, as you heard from the university, because this is one-time money, and consistent with the budget request that we've presented to you here over the last several months, would direct these resources toward technology. We would add to that leveraged equipment, which I heard one of the speakers from Rochester, I think, mention earlier. That's a very effective program for us. It enables us to direct resources to campuses with community partners and bring much needed improved equipment, whether it's technical equipment or mechanical equipment, into the classrooms. So that would be our intention. It's because it's one-time resources, we've looked to find a way to use it to its best effect without creating a hole that the campuses have to climb out from a year or two from now. So, Mr. Chair and Representative Carlson, thank you.
Thank you.
And, Mr. Chairman, I was informed that some of the students would be available to testify, or one of them at any rate, and I don't know if there are other students.
I'm the only one.
Welcome, and please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Brad Krasser. I'm the state chair of the Minnesota State University Student Association, and I want to apologize if I reiterate any of the comments that were made earlier. However, I think some of them are definitely worth making again, and I'll try to be as brief as possible. Representative Carlson's bill, House File 602, is really about fairness. About 2 years ago, the House and the Senate passed a bill upon recommendation from the governor to take $17.5 million both from the U and $17.5 million from Minsku and transfer it to the state grant program to help with the massive tuition increases because of the cuts. Now, while it was good in theory, it obviously did not go to the students because of the surpluses that we are seeing today. By restoring the money that was cut, we are certain that it will benefit students and MSUSA as a student association, and I'm sure the two-year association as well, they couldn't be here today, supported as well. So I will be here to stand for any questions. Thank you very much.
Any questions?
I think that concludes our testimony. Or is there one more?
We have a Trisha Grimes on my list, I guess. I should just point out to the student group that in testimony, they've been talking about this money would not be targeted towards tuition decreases either, towards technology and other uses. Tricia, thank you. Welcome to our committee.
Mr. Chairman, and Representative Carlson, I've been asked to say on behalf of HESO that HESO is improving the accuracy of its projections. The large cancellation was partly because of the large out-of-model adjustment HESO made in 2003 when the agency was trying to keep up with unprecedented demand for the state grant program. Some of the reasons for that unprecedented demand were new features the legislature used to expand eligibility for the state grant program in the 2001 session, and sometimes we have limited information to estimate the cost of features that haven't been in place before. We will never be exactly on target with our projections because they depend on the decisions of 125 institutions and 250,000 individual students and how many credits they take and what kinds of courses they take. However, we expect that as we continue to improve the projections, we are much less likely to have large cancellations or shortfalls. One of the comments I was told to make is that if the legislature wants to address potential surpluses, perhaps the language should also address shortfalls. The question is, would the University of Minnesota and Minsku fill in the difference when there are shortfalls in the state grant program? The $35 million in the bill was already counted as cancellations in the February forecast. The administration's position is that if the $35 million in this bill is appropriated to the University of Minnesota and Minsku, spending on something else would have to be reduced by $35 million. That's
okay. Thank you. Any questions? Any comments from the author?
Chairman, yes, I was the last comment isn't necessarily accurate, at least from my perspective. What would happen is that the reserve fund would be reduced by the $35 million temporarily, and then that would be refilled potentially in the November forecast. So there wouldn't necessarily be a direct reduction in terms of what would be available for the next biennium. What would happen, it would be very similar to the deficiency bill, and Mr. Chairman, you and I are both on Ways and Means, and remember what we did to fund the deficiency bill was we temporarily used a bit of the reserve money, and then the February forecast refilled that reserve fund, and so the same thing could happen with the November forecast. My point is it wouldn't necessarily be cut. But
all right, so we're to the point where we want to renew your motion that House File 602 be held over for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill.
The second motion I made, right? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right, thank you. Members, I think that we're ready for a vacation. So our meeting is over.